Good morning, everyone. This is Maya Thompson, intern for Law Matters radio show and your host for today. Before we start the show, I'd like to remind everyone that our online auction to support Law Matters is still open on lawmatters1030.org. So go check it out. There are a lot of interesting items to bid on. In the studio today, I have Cherie Meeks and Gerald Williams. How y'all feeling today?
Very good.
Very good.
Cherie, tell us a little bit about what you do.
So I am the president of the Tucson branch NAACP, and so I have the privilege of working with the oldest and boldest civil rights organization in the nation, and our branch here in the city of Tucson is a strong organization that has been around for quite some time, and so we are doing work throughout the community to end oppression, to eliminate race-based discrimination, and so we find different opportunities to do that across disciplines and various areas.
Thank you. And Gerald?
Yes, I work for the Pima County Criminal Justice Reform Unit. I'm the HEAT coordinator there. HEAT is a cultural-based program for African-American males from 18 to 35 to help stop recidivism and return whole individuals back to society.
All right. So I wanted to start off talking about some news. So the arrest of this Georgia legislator, Representative Park Cannon. This incident occurred recently, so you guys want to talk about this?
Yeah, sure. I can start talking about that. This is hopefully some of you have been able to see what's been happening on the news or you've read about it. There was the Senate Bill 202 in Georgia was signed by the folks there to pretty much legalize voter suppression. This would make it difficult for volunteers to legally provide water and food for folks that are waiting in long lines. This would make it difficult for individuals to vote if they did not have identification materials, and add additional layers and really challenges to folks being able to get out and vote. And so there was an individual legislator that went to be heard. And if you were able to see the video that I've seen several times, it's very troubling to see how this individual was treated when simply being present in a space. And so just the criminalization is terrible. And so what is happening in Georgia, we cannot stand by and let this happen. And so I want to encourage people to speak out, to speak out against voter suppression. There are several bills that are in places for consideration across the country to suppress the vote. And they are being strategically designed, I believe, in ways that may make it through the House and through the Senate. And we can't stand by for that. So I want to encourage folks to know what's happening, because you may have one strategy for registering to vote and getting out to ensure that you are able to vote in the primaries and then in the general election. And you may find that there are some barriers when that time comes. So we need to be paying attention now, not simply wait until it is a presidential election year, but to always be mindful of legislation and ways that systems are being created and processes being created that will hurt our entire community.
Yeah, I did see that video, and that was very troubling. And I think are they being represented by, I think, someone from the NAACP?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We will not stand by for this. It's just a terrible, terrible thing that's happening, and we see it before our eyes. And so to know that folks have fought really hard, you know, given their lives, given their blood, sweat, and tears to ensure that all people have the right to vote. And then to find that it is 2021 and there are still measures that are making progress to suppress the vote, that's problematic.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm assuming that this is in direct correlation to Georgia turning blue.
Absolutely. Definitely. I would say so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the next topic, staying with Georgia, I wanted to move on to is this shooting that happened in Atlanta with six out of the 8 victims were Asian American. So I wanted to talk about a little bit of the hate crimes against Asian American people that we've been seeing recently, especially with the pandemic and a lot of the rhetoric going around. Gerald, do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Well, I mean, as we see, the hate crimes are gradually, well, they've taken off, put it that way. They're not gradually. They've been gaining momentum. We just had another one here in Colorado as well. But as we continue to stand with our minority brothers, we have to make it a point that we all understand that this could be your family. This could happen to you. This could hit your home. As the Asian community mourns their family members and their community, we have to also make it a point that the government is responsible. The gun laws and everything that we have, that we protect people to be able to carry guns. We make it a right, I should say, to bear arms. And that is what is harming our community and our nation.
Yeah. So a lot of this rhetoric was started by former President Donald Trump. Do you think Joe Biden is doing enough to kind of stop this rhetoric, you know, dispel these rumors?
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think that he has spoken out against it. He has been in the forefront in ways that our former president was not. This is violence that has been happening for years. This isn't something that just started. I would say even beyond 1 year ago. His rhetoric certainly added fuel to the fire and the horrible things that he was saying. And I believe that we're seeing the
results of it.
The results, yes, of his violent language, his rhetoric that has manifested. You know, you say things and people have taken time to think about how they're going to act out. I mean, when I think about things that have happened, January 6th, of course, the violence that that mm-hmm. we've seen most recently, these are all things that folks have planned. You know, I don't think these were a wake up one day and go out and be violent. I think that they were strategic. And I believe that they were fueled by the former president. We can't stand for that. The president is speaking out, but it's going to take community members as well. It's going to take us as a nation to rise up against these things that we're saying. These aren't new things. So this feeling of invisibility has to be removed. Same with George Floyd. I mean, I've had so many conversations about how it was not on May 25th, 2020, when we saw George Floyd murdered before our eyes. That was not the first time that has happened. But for whatever reason, the country was still enough to pay attention to it and to take action. And that made things happen. And I believe that now we're also seeing that with the Asian community, that these are things that have happened and folks just weren't listening. But we've got to pay attention to one another, because it's going to be this community one day, another community the next day, and it's going to be in our backyards tomorrow. And so we have to support one another, because these are issues of humanity. We've got to get back to humanity and treating people as if they matter, because we all do. And these behaviors, making no excuses for violent behavior, making no excuses for why someone may have done this or that, but holding people accountable. That's the justice system I want to see.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, there was no real minority group that was left untouched by Donald Trump. You know, African Americans, Mexican Americans, women. He really covered all his bases.
Yeah. Well, and I do want to affirm that the NAACP supports our Asian American Pacific Islander brothers and sisters, and we stand with them.
Yeah. And I think all of our hearts go out to those families who are suffering right now.
Definitely.
Yeah. Gerald, you mentioned a little bit about gun reform, Second Amendment. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, as we continue to see, America is built on greed. So the gun reform, I don't think it's going to change anything. It won't stop a lot of the hate crime, because you can obtain a gun illegally. So it's more than just gun reform that needs to happen. As Cherie was saying, we need to look at everyone as human beings. And also, as she was saying, all of these attacks and things that have been happening are plotted. They're not just wake up, fly by night, okay, we're going to do this. So they have strategically planned, once he lost the election, to continue to do whatever they're doing. We've seen this happen on American soil month after month, week after week, day after day. And as you can see, as they're trying to charge everyone that happened, that was at the Capitol riot, you see differences in the way things are going. Just for one, the guy that was from Arizona, I mean from Phoenix, Arizona, he was a vegan, and they made it important to cater to his diet. I've never seen anything that like that in my life.
Wow.
You know, and that's where you see a lot of the differences in where America is thinking. You know, you can't think that you could continue to fuel a fire and not expect it for it to blow up. So gun reform is something that we need, but like I said, that won't stop the atrocities that are happening on American soil.
Yeah, I mean, during the Black Lives Matter protests, some people were suggesting, you know, disarming police, having them only having tasers and batons, which are already pretty dangerous. But do you think that would be a viable solution?
No, I'm not for this banning the police. We need the police. We need law and order. We just have to train them better. We have to make sure that we pay attention to who we are hiring. There's been a lot of things from the beginning of time as far as racism in all institutions. But you have ghost skins that are hierarchy in all of these institutions. So they run everything. So as we continue to try to change legislation and build laws to help and combat this stuff, they are the ones that approve it. And so I don't see too much change if we don't attack the head. It's like a snake. Once you cut the head off the snake, the body will follow.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we talked a little bit, mentioned a little bit about the, was it July 6th protest? Sorry, January 6th. Got my months messed up.
That's all right. It's a J.
And the people who were attacking the Capitol. So let's talk a little bit about, and this is a sort of a generalization about the people who might have been there. QAnon, who generally support former President Donald Trump. I mean, Gerald, would you like to, I know we were talking a little bit about it before the start of the show. You mentioned that you hadn't heard of it before I had put it here on the outline. Do you want to talk about your thoughts on it just real quick? I know you just did some research.
Well, from the research that I saw, there's a group of militant people that are thinking, to me, very irrationally, and they're fueling these conspiracy theories just to get people thinking their way. I can't go too in depth on exactly everything that they're about, but I mean, to me, they're just another hate group to continue to fuel hate, to continue to separate us as Americans and as a country. And being a Christian and understanding that we're all one. We're all one blood. That's the way God created us, but he gave us the uniqueness of our own skin. So if we don't do something about that group, I really see them continue to plot and do whatever they can to divide us as a country.
Sherie, do you want to talk about it?
Well, I don't want to give too much power to the group. So I don't, okay. and not speaking about them specifically, but there are groups out there that are designed to tear us apart. And this is, I believe, one of them. And these groups have power in places that can make things happen. There are legislators that have been connected to the organization.
Yeah.
And so when you think about the ways, the systems, and you know, there's a lot of talk about systems and structures and the ways that discrimination and oppression are embedded in these systems. And so that makes it more challenging to disrupt because it is a system on which we have built this country. That's not a quick fix. But I do believe that legislation is a powerful way to make change. But if you have the folks that are writing the legislation that are passing or not passing legislation connected to groups such as this, we've got to be really mindful of that and who we are electing and who we continue to re-elect and who we can put in places to challenge the folks that are in place that have the ability to continue to perpetuate hate, to continue to perpetuate oppression against any group of people. So they're out there. They're out there. And I was looking at, I believe it was Southern Law. I'm going to mess up the name. Southern Poverty Law Organization. That's not what it's called. but their hate map, and to and they show all of the, or maybe, I'm sure not all of them, but many of the hate organizations throughout the country. So many. And I think it's easy to assume that they are in the South, but they are all over the country. And when you have connections all over the country, you impact legislation all over the country. And then we are perpetuating hate all over the country. So we've got to be mindful of how we can address these issues in multiple ways, because there is no one fix. If there was one fix, I'd have to believe that someone would have figured it out by now. But this is going to take some collaboration, some coming together, some people on the ground protesting, some people writing legislation, others, you know, talking to people, influencing. But we have got to make this a collective effort, because there are many people out there who are perpetuating hate against certain groups. And in order to combat that, we've got to come together. We've got to come together.
Yeah. The scary thing about QAnon to me is I've seen multiple stories of people who loved ones have gotten really into QAnon, mm-hmm. and they become this different person who, you know, you don't really recognize, or they're just kind of spewing this hate speech constantly. And so, you know, I've read stories of people who have had to cut off dear friends or parents, grandparents, because it's just, you know, sometimes they get so deeply embedded in that you can't really pull them back, however much you might love that person. Mm-hmm.
Maya, you mentioning that makes me think of the movie Higher Learning. Have any of you seen the movie Higher Learning?
I
believe it came out in 1995. It's got, you know, Busta Rhymes, Lawrence mm-hmm. Fishburne, Ice Cube, Tyra Banks, Omar Epps. Okay, so all these fancy people. But I think about the storyline of Remy. And he was this white guy who came from small town, I don't remember where. But he was just looking for a place to belong. Mm-hmm. And it was the Nazi group, I believe mm-hmm.
that
you know, spoke to him, gave him the time of day, invited him to some parties, and then it's based on a college campus, and then started to teach him about their organization and instilled hate in him. So when I think about that movie and I think about where we are in the country, there are people who are looking for a place to belong. They want to be accepted. And it is groups like that one that are doing the work to identify these people. Mm-hmm. And then they can get them to believe what they want them to believe.
And carry out their acts.
Yeah. So we have to be diligent in educating and giving real history and teaching love and teaching humanity and teaching things that will allow or provide someone with the information to make better decisions. So that's just a movie I think is really powerful. And although an older movie, I think is very timely in its message.
Yeah. And people become really vulnerable online. You know, sometimes people mm-hmm. enter echo chambers. I know that's something that everyone struggles with. You know, you read one source of news mm-hmm. and you don't really look at another side. I think we're probably all guilty of that. You know, it's difficult to hear someone else's opinion on that. But especially people who are maybe less tech savvy or more willing to believe these, who are vulnerable online, those are the people who are being targeted by QAnon. So I just encourage everyone listening to do research, even if, you know, if you're liberal, look at Fox News, see what they're saying. If you use Fox News as your main news source. Look at some other stuff. Look at the New York Times. You know, stomach other opinions so your mind is more open, just so you understand where other people are coming from. All right. I think the next thing that I wanted to talk about is, you know, what work are you guys doing in our community? So, Gerald, do you want to talk about some programs that you're a part of?
I'm a part of several programs. I work with AFSC. Again, I work with the Criminal Justice Reform Unit and the HEAT coordinator there. We are doing a lot of work. Yesterday, we were out with Community Medical handing out Narcan kits to inform the community regarding overdose deaths and help prevent that. I work with my church. Just a lot of awareness. With AFSC, we were trying to get legislation passed on prison reform. We've been at that for the last 3 years, and we haven't made the progress that we wanted to make, but we continue to knock on the door. That's one of the biggest issues that we're working on right now, trying to bring alternative to incarceration programs here to Pima County so we can better combat that. I'm also very avid about mental health. I have a child that deals with mental health issues, and I'm trying to become a peer support specialist right now to be able to help him and others deal with their issues on that level. I think that's about it, what I really do for right now for the community.
Oh, that's amazing. So, I'm really passionate about prison reform. My dad went to prison. So Sheree, would you talk a little bit about, what does the NAACP do for prison reform in terms of, you know?
So prison reform, as with any kind of reform, is a multifaceted approach. And so we certainly think of it that way. The NAACP has been focusing on legislation as well as holding law enforcement accountable for various things. And so our national office put forth these expectations that we were during election season. We certainly reached out to our local law enforcement agencies to address these issues with them. And so I would like to share those with you all and what these five areas were. And so we were calling for police reform and asking for federal legislation that would mandate a zero tolerance approach to penalize or prosecute police officers who kill unarmed, nonviolent, and non-resisting individuals in an arrest. And so this would look like a ban on the use of knee holds and choke holds, a use of force continuum for police departments that would ensure that there would be at least three steps with clear rules on escalation. We're also interested in the state's Open Records Act, which would ensure that officer misconduct information and disciplinary histories are not shielded from the public. So we don't find out after someone is killed, the history of a particular officer and their history. And then recertification credentials that they would be denied for police officers if determined that their use of deadly force was unwarranted. So those are things that are really important. And I go back to that because I think that looking at law enforcement and the surveillance and the policing of communities of color leads to what we're seeing in the prison system with the justice system. So I think these are all related. And I am, excited to report that the Tucson Police Department has implemented these, and they actually voluntarily adopted the can't wait policies. And so if you haven't heard of that, definitely look that up. There are these eight policies, and our police department supported those. Last year, we hosted in June of last year, we hosted a town hall with the police department, and that was an opportunity for us to talk about what has been happening, across the country, as well as locally. What are the interactions with police officers and communities of color, in particular the Black community? What does that look like? What is that surveillance? And so, is it that we're being arrested or we're being stopped more because you are focusing your time and attention in our communities? Or, if we're 4% of the population here in Tucson, but much, much greater population, in the jails, Let's explore that. Why is that happening? Yeah. So that's something that we've been working on that is extremely important to us. But then also there's legislation, you know, with the prison reform, obviously, you know, they are related. And one thing I just want to take the chance to say this now is this is legislation, but I see it very much related. We want to encourage folks to contact your senator, because right now House Bill 2168 is being considered, and this would establish requirements for local law enforcement to report the use of force incidents into a national database. That may sound like something that should already exist. Sure, it absolutely should. It absolutely should. But right now, that's something that, I mean, today, right now, when you're done listening to us, to go and find your senator, send an email, your Arizona State Senator, send an email, make a phone call, and encourage them to vote yes on this House bill, because this is definitely something, you know, that impacts our interactions with police officers.
Yeah, that's great. And so we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back. And feel free to call. Our number is 790-2040. So thank you so much. Stay on the line. Thanks for staying on, everyone. In the studio today, I have Cherie Meeks and Gerald Williams. And we're covering a lot of bases. So let's start with some talks about cultural difference. So I wanted to talk a little bit about a past experience. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Muslim ban and the work that the NAACP did on that during former President Donald Trump's administration.
Well, again, I would say another example of the former president using his power to discriminate and to put challenges forward to people based on what they look like, based on who they are, where they come from. And so that is certainly not something we support. Again, we are an organization that is welcoming to all people, although NAACP, we know that that stands for National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And so we do not stand for any discrimination. Much like what we are seeing now with Asian Americans, what we have seen with Muslims, what we are seeing with, you know, pick a group, we don't stand for that. And so the NAACP really wants to ensure that the rights of all people are respected and honored.
Yeah. And I know you talked a little bit about what's been going on here locally, but what are some other projects that you work on?
So there are quite a few things going on that we're excited about. I always want to go back to legislation, so certainly I want to encourage people. My undergraduate degree is in political science, so I just like talking about that. But legislation is important. Again, thinking about systems, thinking about structures, that's a way for us to make some change. We have certainly been involved in voter education, voter awareness, and so this past year, of course, being involved in voter registration initiatives and connecting with churches and other organizations to get information out to individuals, not to influence who they vote for, because we are a nonpartisan organization. However, we want to make sure that community members know the candidates and know where they stand on policy, so we can support policy. And if you happen to be the candidate that has the best policy, then, you know, that's great. So that is really important to us, and we are thinking about that throughout the year, every year. We've also been involved in some of the things that have been happening in Georgia. So when there was the runoff, we were involved in contacting voters there in Georgia and encouraging them to continue to get back out there and vote. We continue our collaborations with the Jewish community. So this is another group that we've been working with and talking about racial tensions and racial injustices and learning with and from one another, and it has been really powerful and has enhanced our conversations and discussions, and lots of different things have come forth as a result of that. Certainly, we continue our connections with law enforcement and holding them accountable and saying, you know, this is what we believe nationally and here locally is important. And so we do continue those conversations. That was not a one-time thing. I think that's so important to remember. These are not issues that we address simply because something happened, something made the news cycle. But these are lived experiences. These are true, ongoing, daily experiences that people take with them. And so it is important to us to address these things. And so we do continue to do that as well. And certainly, we have to acknowledge that we're in the midst of a global health pandemic. And so it is important to us that we're thinking about the ways in which the pandemic has impacted us. And our state conference has been involved in a town hall. And actually, we have one today starting at 9 o'clock. So when I jump off this, I'll be jumping on something else.
All right.
But we have been talking about various responses to the pandemic, how it is impacting the criminal justice system, how it has impacted education, our health, as well as how churches have been responding to this. And so this is timely. This is important. This pandemic certainly has impacted communities financially. It's impacted our health, our education. I mean, we could talk about education all day in the ways that this is impacting from preschool beyond college. Folks are impacted by this. So we are doing some work behind the scenes to educate and share that information with the community to empower the community.
And there are any more like points of change that really needed to be focused on?
You know, I would say that there's certainly a point in in every aspect. You know, we think about healthcare. The African American community is disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. And so what does that look like? How can we impact that? How is that going to impact housing? What resources are out there? There may be resources, but oftentimes people don't know what those resources are, or they're not sure if they're eligible for those. And so we want to provide information, but we also recognize the barriers and the ways in which we share information could also be a barrier. When I think about the communities that may not have access to internet or phone to even sign up to get the vaccine, well, if they don't have that resource, they don't have those tools to sign up, then they probably don't have those tools to check an email or to get on social media or to get the information that we're trying to share with them. So again, these responses to these issues have to be multifaceted. We have to be thinking from the place of the audience, whomever we're trying to impact, not from our place of privilege, I would say, as people who are that have the information and are trying to share it with others.
Yeah, I was surprised because I, you know, I saw that people of color are disproportionately affected mm-hmm. by coronavirus. So I was surprised that there was no, well, I was not necessarily surprised, but I was interested to see that there was no, you know, kind of support for people of color getting the vaccination, you know, because of how it affects those communities.
And there have been some efforts. I know some of the local churches have been served as locations to get the vaccine. And mm-hmm. so by going to the community rather than expecting, I was driving here today and saw, I'm not even sure where I was going past, but I could tell it was set up for drive-through vaccinations. And so going into the communities where people live, rather than expecting them to have the transportation and the ability, a vehicle to actually drive through to get the vaccine, but maybe if it's at the local church or a local school or a location that is in the neighborhood, then I think that would increase, you know, access. It's gonna change access and willingness for folks to get there.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned something about kind of news cycles, and personally, I'm young. I'm on social media a lot. I've seen, you know, we had a huge movement for Black Lives Matter over, I think it was last summer. My time perception is off since the pandemic, but you know, and you see everyone talking about it. There was the Black Square post, which was a little bit questionable, but there was all that media attention on Black Lives Matter, and there was this huge surge of like people learning, I remember you also mentioned like monitoring of Black communities. And I remember a lot of people talking about how police started as kind of slave watch, and some people who were starting to look into history more.
Yes.
But I've seen that, you know, die down since there were, you know, I don't see anyone really talk about it anymore. So how do we, Gerald, how do we get that back into the conversation? You know, what do we do to get attention on it consistently?
Well, it died down, but it is not a dead issue. We still want to emphasize that Black lives do matter. But right now, the conversation is shifted to all minorities matter. As Black people, we have suffered, as I continue to say, since the beginning of the time. So the focus, just focusly main attention on Black lives, that's one of the things that I think we have to look at. But as we continue to move forward, the minority life period, or life in entirety, is what is important. A lot of the Black Lives Matter, I love the slogan, but a lot of the things that they want to say, a lot of what they represent, I don't agree with, because, you know, it's just a lot of things that from the politics of it. But in a whole, you just can't continue to focus only on Black lives. If you can do that, that's what separates us. And our neighbors and our allies are the ones that are helping us push this issue. So continuing to focus on Black lives, yes, that is the key. But we're not just trying to say Black Lives Matter. We want you to look at us as a human being. This 2021, right now people are taking training in how to deal with Black people. And you know, that is, you know, crazy in itself. And you look at today in this time, slavery has been modernized in prisons. So we continue to combat slavery and things of that nature, but we don't want to just continue to say Black lives, Black lives, Black lives. Yes, we know Black lives matter, and we thank you all for your help, but minorities in a whole and in general, we all stand as one.
Yeah. And so a listener wanted to know, I think, Cherie, this is about the bill that you were talking about before we took the break. Could you give a brief explanation of that bill, or and kind of the pros and the cons of that?
I'm not sure if we are referring to the Senate Bill 202 or the House Bill 2168. So I'll mention both of them.
On the screen, I just have H1 R1, and I wasn't sure which one that referred to.
I'm not sure either. Okay, but Senate Bill 202. Oh, well, I guess that one we talked about, that was in Georgia, so maybe that wasn't the one we talked about right before.
Yeah, maybe the more local one.
But the House Bill 2168 would establish the requirements for the local law enforcement to report their use of force incidents into a national database. I think that is something that, you know, we should vote yes on, because that creates transparency. So if I am a police officer here in Tucson and I have a use of force complaint or use of force issue here in Tucson, and I decide to leave and go be a police officer in Cleveland, Ohio, that information follows me. So that you're not finding if then I'm in another incident in Ohio. That's the state I just said.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, in an incident there that no one ever knows about what happened in Tucson. We need to create transparency so that folks don't have this ability to simply move from agency to agency across the country without being held accountable for the behaviors that they have had before.
Yeah.
So that is why that is absolutely critical. And that is critical because we are also seeing in the lives that we have lost over time, many of the police officers have been involved with complaints and had, you know, incidents of use of force, but no one knew.
Yeah.
So this database provides information that is useful to the entire community.
And another question was, So for getting a vaccine, I'm assuming you need like an ID, right, to present. So how can folks who maybe can't drive or don't have a driver's license, how can they address that issue so that they could get a vaccine?
Can you restate that question for me?
I just see, don't we need ID for everything, driver's license, et cetera? So I think it's in reference to getting a vaccine. You know, yeah. I had to show identification. I got my first shot. So I'm assuming maybe folks who can't drive have questions about having an ID.
And how they might get there. Well, and I think that's part of the challenge. That creates another barrier. Are these pods or these locations for vaccinations in locations where folks don't have to drive to get to? Is it on a bus line? Is it in the community where folks can walk to? Is there a walk-up option so that it's not just drive-through? Can folks be as close as simply walking up? I think these are all things that are important for folks to consider, for Pima County Health Department to consider when these are being set up and how they set them up.
And so what about for voting? I mean, I don't know much about, I thought it was for vaccines too. I don't know much about voting laws. I just turned 18, so I haven't gotten the chance to vote.
All right, okay, so you'll be voting soon, yeah. Okay. We can chat about that. So yes, their IDs are required for so many things. But I think the issue here is there is, you know, have your ID, have another proof of who you are, a water bill or a light bill. Those are the kinds of things that are being compounding this requirement for folks, which is making it difficult for them because there are these additional things that you must bring with you. And it just makes me think back to, back in the day, Jim Crow laws and these different things that were literacy tests and, you know, things like that that were put forth for Black folks in order to vote. I mean, to have to take a test, a literacy test, or to have to take a government test, yeah. Before being allowed to vote. Well, now I have to have my light bill in my name, or I have to have, you know, this ID and these other things. When if you've already registered to vote and you can prove who you are, that should be enough.
Yeah, and my mom has had trouble even, you know, when you move houses, mm-hmm. you know, with finding your new place of voting. I think there have been times where she's gone out to vote and they're like, you can't vote here. Like, you have to go home and then go to this other place. And then they're like, you can't vote here. So I can't even imagine, mm-hmm. you know, she's a white woman and very privileged. And so I just can't even imagine how it would be for a person of color, because I've seen what she's dealt with. Mm-hmm. And she's not even in one of those communities that's being oppressed.
Well, and imagine taking the day off to go vote, or making sure your kids are in child care, and you got a ride, or somebody dropped you off, or whatever. All these things that continue to make it more difficult. I'm dropped off, and now you're telling me I have to go somewhere else, and now there's a 3-hour line there, or hopefully it's not that long, but These are challenges.
All forms of suppression.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we need to work to eliminate them. And if that means creating more spaces where voting can happen, so that we decrease the possibility of the lines being long, then let's do that.
Yeah, I mean, some countries have the day off. I think everyone has the day off to go vote. Yeah,
not here.
No. So Gerald, you kind of mentioned that people are learning and taking classes on like how to deal with Black people in a workplace, how to deal, you know. Can you talk a little bit about those classes? Have you had any maybe at your workplace?
No, I haven't had any at my place, but I know that HR, they are making bulletins and making it aware of how to deal with African Americans in the workplace and what is appropriate, what conversation is appropriate. We see it daily, time in and time out. Someone may say something, a racial slur or a racial joke, and next thing you know, they're fired. So all of a sudden, these things are becoming important right now in society, which should have been from day one. Mm-hmm. As I have worked here in Arizona, you know, I've had several bouts with, you know, people at the workplace saying racial things to me, and you know, I can't take it to the higher up, because then you, as a Black person, we look like we're starting trouble. So you know, we've been taught to deal with it from birth. But it is very, very appreciated, I should say, that right now that all these corporations are making it a point to make sure people curb their break time jokes and their water bubbler jokes, and keeping people's feelings and their race important.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not even a direct racial slur, right? Sometimes it's you know, microaggressions or like just implicit racism that like one has, you know, ingrained in you because it's a racist society. And since we grow up in that, there are people, I know my mom is reading books and trying to do her own work based on, you know, she's never thought that she has any ingrained racism, but you know, the more that she reads, you know, the more that she's able to recognize it. And she's like, it's really hard work because no one wants to admit that they have any part of them has ingrained racism. And, you know, my dad, my stepdad growing up was black. And so I got to see people treat him differently versus her differently, you know, how it was to walk down the street with him versus how it was to walk down the street with her. So, yeah. Sheree, have you seen any movements in your workplace?
Yes. So I work in an educational setting. So mm-hmm. there's lots of workshops, lots of webinars. Folks are talking about it. I will agree with something you said earlier that, you know, the momentum I don't think is as powerful as it was before. And so I'm hoping that we can reinvigorate that and that, you know, we don't wait for something bad to happen to care about that. But, you know, you talked about that implicit racism. We all have biases. And that's, you know, I think that's the thing that is tough for people to sit with. Just the fact that we all consume stuff, whether it's what we're seeing on TV, social media, the way we grew up, our background, the neighborhood, we're consuming information and we don't even realize it. Mm-hmm. But that impacts our attitudes and stereotypes that we may have about other people, and it impacts how we treat them. So I may not know that somebody got on the elevator and I kind of grabbed my purse, or I may not recognize that when this person walks in the room that I react in a certain way. But the reality is we do that. And mm-hmm. I say we because everyone does that, because bias lives in all of us. So what can we do about that? Recognize those biases. And that's where the work comes in. You have to acknowledge how you treat people, what you say, what you do when certain groups of people are around, or, you know, those kinds of things. But once you recognize it, then you can address it. That doesn't mean they're going to go away because they're innate in us. But you recognize it, and then when you know better, you can do better. Mm-hmm. Hi, Angela. So that, I think, is just so powerful because we got to accept that, you know, I have things in me that I do that may be harmful to other people. And that's tough to sit with. And I agree with you. A lot of folks are reading books and trying to learn. We got to keep that up. Keep it up.
Like watching movies, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. I think one of the main things is if you pay attention to what you do when people are not around and the things that you mm-hmm. say when people are not around, it will bleed over to what you do and what you say when they are around. Yeah. So, you know, as you said, we all have biases, but, you know, I wasn't raised in a white community, but I wouldn't treat you differently. So that's one of the main things that I think Christianity plays into the part, because I look at you as an equal. If something was happening to you right outside this door, I would stop that. I wouldn't turn my back and say, oh, she's white. You know, what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. And that's one of the main things that we have to address here in society, is just standing up for what's right, no matter what the race, creed, or color. What's right is right.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely super important to acknowledge that everyone has this. I think, you know, there's a lot of white fragility around talking about implicit racism and bias. And even, it even exists in non-black people of color. You know, I'm Mexican, but I'm very white passing. My mom is very white. And so, you know, I have bias. I have all of these things. And it's the most important step is to kind of admit it and, you know, acknowledge it so that we can start to deal with it, so we can start to move forward.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Gerald, as we start to wrap up, do you want to talk about anything, introduce any programs,
Well, earlier you asked me an organization that I work with, and I totally forgot about the MacArthur Foundation and the Safety and Justice Challenge and the work that we're doing here in Pima County to combat the increase in the county jail. We are helping homeless people with mental health issues get released. We are helping the African-American community and anybody that fits the eligibility to be released to society, getting into programs and things of that nature. And again, the HEAT program stands for Habilitation, Empowerment, and Accountability Therapy. That program should be launching here, hopefully, sometime this summer. And again, it is created for African-American males to combat recidivism. They have a HER program, it's for women. They have a HEAT program for juvenile as well, and we're trying to bring all of those programs here to Pima County. So that, that right now is where all of my efforts will be concentrated.
And Sheree, are there any programs you want to advocate for?
Yeah, I just want to mention one another organization. I'm a part of the Network for Equity and Educational Development, which stands for NEED. And this is an organization that works to reduce disparities for Black youth in the juvenile justice system. And so it's a collaborative of community leaders and organizations that really works to build relationships with the young people and their families in the juvenile justice system. And so I just want to encourage people, NAACP, please check us out. Feel free to join the organization. Go to NAACPTucson.com to join, become a member, help us in the fight. There are so many different disparities and things happening in our community. And if we rise up together, we can do this together.
Yeah. I just want to remind everyone that the Law Matters auction is still happening. So go to lawmatters1030.org. And, you know, we have some really interesting items to bid on. I think there are some FBI agents that you can have lunch with, talk with law enforcement. So I just want to thank you guys for coming on the show. This was really good. This was really interesting. And I just, check out the auction online, support Law Matters, and, shop local, stay safe. Everyone have a great week.